from the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. This is the Closing Mark Report. It's the 26th day of December, 2008. Happy holidays. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated. He's in Lafayette, Indiana. And then later in the half hour, we'll hear about my favorite type of Santa Claus. In agricultural news for the day, Rabobank says the credit crunch is on across rural America. Iowa Senator Grassley is none too pleased with Russia. And Henry Ford's idea of making a car out of soybeans may just find new life where the rubber meets the road. I'll have details during this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report, of course, is a production of WILL. That's public radio from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
On a Friday afternoon, futures finished in Chicago like this. The nearby March wheat at 5.99 1/4, 17 cents higher. May at 6.11 3/4, up 17. And July wheat settled $6.23, up 17 on the day. Corn market in Chicago with the nearby contract at 4.12 1/4, up 14 1/4. That's the March. The May at 4.22 1/2, up 14 1/2. And July corn at 4.32 1/2, up 14 1/2. September corn futures 4.42 1/2, up 14 3/4. And December contract at $4.56 1/2, finished 15 cents higher today. January beans at 9.51 3/4, up 36. The March at 9.56 1/2, up 37 1/2. And May beans at 9.67 1/2, up 37 1/2. July 37 3/4 higher at 9.78 3/4. November soybeans at 9.79 1/2, up 38 1/2. Jan bean meal at 2.97.70, up 9.80. Jan oil at 32.82, up 1.51. From the CME Group livestock side, December live cattle 85.90, down $1.57 1/2, and the February lean hogs at 58.95, 1.90 lower on the day. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like on the afternoon. February crude oil at 37.55, up 2.20, and the March at 38.23, down $3.80. January ethanol, $1.66 2/10, up 4 9/10. Natural gas trading the Jan at 5.83, that's 8 cents lower on the day. RBOB gasoline at 84 3/10 cents, up a nickel on the afternoon. The January heating oil or diesel fuel at $1.25, up 5 2/10 cents for the day. January propane futures currently trading 3 1/2 cents lower at 57 7/10 cents. Gold futures at 870 40 cents, up $23.30 for the day, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average at 84.87. That's just about 18 points higher. The U.S. dollar at 80.78 is down 25.7 cents on the afternoon. The CRB index, of course, is trading at 213.26. That's up 2.61 for the day. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. A couple of things to remind you of. Please visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's W-I-L-L. AG.org. There you'll find our daily ag programming, including this report, Commodity Week, which airs at 6 a.m. and 11:30 a.m. on AM 580, as well as ways to listen to those programs as a podcast. It's all at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report on a Friday afternoon. Time to check in with Chuck Shelby at Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana, to see what happened for a Friday and the week. Good afternoon to you, Chuck. Thanks for sticking around today. We appreciate that.
Worth the way we closed today.
Well, you know, it's kind of an interesting close. I didn't catch the beginning of that. I had the wrong button picked up there. But I assume you thought that the close was pretty interesting. And if you looked at the weekly trade, that was pretty interesting as well. Beans up today, up 37 cents. Corn futures were up 14. If you look at the week, corn futures were up 31 cents on the week. Soybeans were up 83 cents. Bode well for the coming year?
I think so. We have kind of a thin trade going on, but the momentum certainly seems to have shifted. We've crossed some 50-day moving averages and closed well above there. Short-term, you're probably technically well overbought, but when you look at the more medium-term and longer-term indicators, this market not overdone. Seems to be picking up a little bit of attitude. Talk to folks in Chicago we work with up there that maybe a little bit of attitude shift, that maybe the worst is over.
The worst is over for just the grains or the economy as a whole?
Well, I think they're looking at the grain specifically, but I think you can couple that with ideas, again, that a lot of this money that's been promised from Washington or going to come, or the bailout of the auto industry, really none of that's really going to go into big-time effect until the Obama administration gets in there and starts signing bills. And I think it was encouraging to see to the rest of the economy that they're going to have a plan and hit the ground running.
Well, once they hit the ground running, will it mean much for you as a farmer or you as a broker, either one?
Oh, I think so. I mean, this has been a historic event we just went through, Todd, and it certainly impacted us in agriculture. We saw, again, how closely we're tied with the rest of those economic factors that go on in the general population. So I think one of the key things farmers might look for is how supportive the Obama administration will be behind the biofuels. We've seen that industry go some really tough times here, and I think the attitude would be with the former governor of Iowa becoming our new ag secretary. Mm-hmm. I think there's some good things there.
Which were you more impressed with today, corn market gaining 14 cents or the soybeans up 38?
I think we've got to look at soybeans as the leader. I mean, that was one of the fundamental reasons we had this week for the rally. The dry weather in South America has certainly caught traders' attentions and commercials as well. But I think one thing we have to temper that a little bit, it's still pretty early in the season. You know, when you have dry weather early in the season, just like in the U.S., I can't get too excited about that at this point in time.
Have you thought much about what USDA might come up with in their final crop numbers once they're released in mid-January?
Yeah, I think we're looking forward to that. I think we have the impression in the bean market, again, with you talk to farmers around the country, overall, their bean yields, very few farmers were impressed with their bean yields. So we kind of look for maybe the bean yield to be dropped back a little bit. The corn yield on the other side, most guys fairly happy with what went on. We know that late winter weather that affected some of the late harvested corn probably drops the yield a little bit, but looking for a little drop in bean yield.
Well, drop in bean yield, so carry out probably would drop. What do you think about the number of acres of corn that may not be or have not been harvested yet? Is there enough out there that it would have an impact?
Yeah, there's still acres out there, Todd. I think the problem with that, the USDA's, you know, how to interpret that. The second part of that answer would come around, too. We're going to have a whole new, you know, Secretary of Agriculture, some new people in position. So interpretation on that January 12th report may still be coming from the old data and old information. But I think, again, there is enough bushels out there to really have to be concerned. You might lose a half a bushel possibly just from what's left out there.
And then what kind of numbers do you think you have for the 12th of January? 205 was the carryout at this time for soybeans.
Yeah, that number is interesting because it hardly ever changes. The USDA will fiddle around with one side, then they maybe cut the demand or vice versa. So I think what it points out, we're in a very tight bean situation. We've been looking at a number, you know, south of 200 is our view on that number, and more maybe a 180 area might be more realistic. But when you get that tight, the USDA hesitates to really fiddle with that and pull it down too much.
Do you think it will move lower as we get through the rest of the marketing season? That's pretty tight to start in January, and I suppose if usage starts to pick up or the economy starts to run along across the globe, that we could tighten that up a great deal more.
Yeah, when you get that tight, it's really hard for anyone to really predict that, but I think you can see it. The basis is very tight. We've seen good export business to China, so that's a real supportive factor in the bean market, and again, that is counterbalanced by the idea of how many acres we're going to expand on the soybean side as we go into 2009. So a bullish factor on one side tempered, I think, as we look forward to the fact that, you know, how many more bean acres we could jump up significantly, as some people have indicated.
Let's switch gears just a little bit. Were you, as a farmer, pretty happy with the USDA decision about the acre program using the 07-08 crop years as opposed to the earlier?
Yeah, I think that's okay, but the problem with that program is it's fairly complicated, Todd. You're going to have to be able to prove your yields. You're also going to be giving up some of your direct payments. And then the third factor, you won't know the results of what you may get out of that program for at least a year behind, because it's going to be an average. And then you have to see your state have a loss, and then you have to have a loss on your own farm. So that program is a pretty complicated program.
Complicated program. You think farmers will try to go for that? Or is the lag time in the payout going to really have an impact on whether they sign up?
I think it's going to have a slow start as far as how many farmers will jump in that program. You also have the opportunity, if you go with the old direct payment type program, you can switch to the ACRE as you go forward. But once you're an ACRE, you're committed. So I think that's another negative. So I think it will not maybe see as big a sign-up as the USDA might have anticipated when they brought it out, or Congress had thought.
Chuck, we appreciate you taking the time today.
Thank you, Todd. Have a good weekend.
You have a good weekend, too. That's Chuck Shelby. He's with Risk Management Commodities Incorporated. Joins us from his Lafayette, Indiana office here on the Closing Mark Report on a Friday afternoon.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Doug Slayton in Galesburg at 309-341-5003. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
In today's agricultural news, access to credit is becoming more critical as high input cost and volatile credit markets put pressure on farmers and their suppliers. Stuart Doan of the National Association of Farm Broadcasting reports.
Speaking at the Ag Retailers Association annual meeting in Texas, Rabo AgriFinance President and CEO John Ryan said while qualified farmers will still be able to borrow money for crop production next year, it's uncertain whether they'll be able to get enough to adequately finance their overall production needs.
As the credit market tightens, it's likely that your clients are going to be looking to you to provide additional financing to cover their input purchases. This increased demand will put more pressure on your working capital.
Ag Retailers President and CEO Jack Ebersbacher agreed that access to credit's a critical issue, but said farmers should not look to input suppliers to provide it.
The retailer's got enough credit issues of his own with inventory costs and payroll of his own. I think the retailer is going to be more intent on making sure that the receivables don't get out of hand.
Meanwhile, Rabo AgriFinance's Ryan projected upward pressure on interest rates and indicated that lenders are placing more emphasis on working capital management, inventory valuation, and collectability of receivables. Stuart Doan, Austin.
Our thanks to Stuart Doan and the NAFB for that report. Moving on now, Russia has now delisted 19 pork processing plants in the U.S., and as a result, these plants can no longer export pork to Russia. There is a thought that Russia should be brought into the World Trade Organization so the U.S. could have better leverage over that country and its delisting actions. Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley, of course, is one congressman who's standing in the way.
I have taken a position they shouldn't be in the WTO because they aren't showing enough responsible decision-making on certain imports and exports anyway.
Grassley says Russia needs to demonstrate it is more of a market economy.
Now, I know that Russia is more of a market economy now than they've ever been, but actions like this show disrespect for the rule of law and international trade. And so I want to make sure that we've got the right attitude of Russia before they even get in.
At the same time, China is in the WTO. Grassley is quick to point out that China, too, has not elevated itself to a market economy status.
You want to remember that when China got in 98 or 99, it was kind of a case of their having such an impact in Asia and such a rapidly growing economy. And remember, they're a lot bigger right now than Russia is, that it was better to have them in than out.
Senator Grassley says China has gone from being one of the top 20 nations in terms of economic growth to where it now may surpass Germany to be the third economic power around the globe. Let's come back to the home front now in the state of Texas, where industry insiders say they can tell a whole host of stories about people who died in explosions after accidentally breaking into gas pipelines. Jaime Medina of the Texas Excavation Safety Center says there are some 270,000 miles of buried pipeline in his state alone.
One-fifth of all of the pipelines in the United States are here in Texas, and the majority of those lines are in the rural areas and farmland.
He says the underground lines in Texas carry crude oil, refined and natural gas, and even jet fuel.
There are jet fuel lines that start in the Corpus Christi area and go all the way up to Dallas-Fort Worth Airport. That's how they pipe all the fuel for their aircraft.
Medina says the state's pipeline infrastructure is compromised by some form of damage more than 800 times each and every month. And finally today, in 1941, Henry Ford introduced a plastic-bodied car whose panels included soybean meal as a component. And while that feat made headlines in history, it never took off commercially. But researchers continued to wonder, well, what if? Today, Agriculture Research Service scientists Lee Zhang and Jeffrey Byers are testing soy flour as a green filler for tires and other natural rubber products. Today's fillers are typically petroleum-based particles called carbon black. Tire manufacturers use them in rubber to improve tensile strength and wear resistance. Studies at the ARS Cereal Products and Food Science Research Unit in Peoria, Illinois, indicate soybean flour also could serve as an inexpensive alternative to today's carbon black tire fillers. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason and produced this report several years ago, back in 2001, but just couldn't resist because I like it so much. I'm going to run it again for you. You know, at Christmas time, little boys all over the nation wait patiently for Santa to bring them a tractor just like their dad's. And if they're lucky, that tractor was made in Dyersville, Iowa. It's the home of Joe Ertl, Toymaker. What I won from Santa this year is a toy tractor. Well, Santa actually already brought it to me. He made it himself. It's a Meadow Green Oliver, 1955, trimmed in clover white with orange and black to set it off. And this little toy tractor is the first model he's ever made with a radio mounted right there on the fender. It's just like the one I clung to as a little boy when Dad and I went to the field. My Santa is Joe Ertl of Dyersville, Iowa. For 50 years, the company his dad founded has made the dreams of little and big farm boys come true.
Now I'm only 5 years old. I've got to do just what I'm told. The Santa Claus is going to be dropping in on me.
Max Armstrong, farm broadcaster, WGN U.S. Farm Report, Chicago. Every kid loves a tractor. There's no doubt in my mind, boys love tractors. And as we get a little bit older, some of us who grew up on those tractors think back to those days. I mean, when I look at my Farmall Super M or the Super H, I think about days of sitting in that tractor bringing in a load of corn when I was a little boy and coming in on a chilly October night with that moon coming up over the corn stalks. Or I think about cultivating corn down to the Wabash Bottoms. I was on one tractor and Dad was on another. You know, there's just something very, very special, especially if it's a tractor that Dad had. You know, there's an emotion that gets wrapped up in that.
It is an emotion that Max Armstrong knows all too well, and one that has made Joseph Ertl's toy tractors worth a lot of money. At this auction in November, to benefit scholarships for future farm broadcasters, Max spent $300 on a 1/8-inch scale Farmall MD. It's special for many reasons.
That's an M diesel, and this one is special because it's a 50th anniversary tractor. On the frame of that tractor are raised letters pointing out that it's the 50th year of toy making for Joseph Ertl, the legendary toy maker who owns Scale Model Toys.
Would you like me to put anything up here on the your name or anything?
Joe Ertl is a celebrity in his own right, and for years his autograph has been sought after. Like Santa, he gives it freely.
Can you write, "Thanks for support of farm broadcasting"?
I'll date it there for you, too. And
you've done this before.
Yeah, a few thousand times.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your
welcome.
Help.
Welcome. Thank you for supporting.
Well, it started way back in 1945 when my father was on strike at a local foundry. And he started making castings in his basement. And one day he made a farm toy, and I was 10 years old at the time. And at that time, the toy tractor sold so well, he never went back to his job again. And of course, I grew up with the business. And then when I was in my senior year of high school, I started taking drafting courses. And we went from sand casting to die casting. And we had to have drawings, so I started making the drawings for the toys, and I've been designing them ever since.
Today, Joe Ertl's company is called Scale Models, and he still loves to design and make toy tractors, in large part, he says, because the farm community has welcomed him into its vast family called agriculture.
It's been a pleasure for me to work my whole life here in the designing of these toys, which have made so many people happy. You know, the farmers have really been great to our family, and I can't think of anything more wholesome than little toy tractor and to be a pretend a farmer. It's so much better than some of these toys I've seen made over the year, and it's been a pleasure for me to be associated with the farmers and the farming industry and everything. It's just been a wonderful life.
What's that?
That's a Christmas present from a very dear friend of mine.
If you're lucky, what you'll find under your Christmas tree this year is a toy tractor made by Joseph Ertl in Dyersville, Iowa. That's what's on the top of my list. Well, by the way, thanks in advance, Santa. Your friend, Todd Gleason at the University of Illinois.
It could be something I might have missed. I had quite a few things on my list. I hope he can fit it all under that Christmas tree. Hope he can fit it all under my Christmas tree.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from the University of Illinois. In 2 minutes, climatologist Steve Hilberg will be here with a look at the agricultural weather.
It's National Pfeffernuss Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1675, Charles II of England issued a proclamation suppressing coffee houses. The public response was so negative that he revoked it on January 8th of 1676. In part, the proclamation declared, "Whereas it is most apparent that the multitude of coffee houses of late years set up and kept within this kingdom, and the great resort of idle and disaffected persons to them, have produced very evil and dangerous effects, His Majesty hath thought it fit and necessary that the said coffee houses be, for the future, put down and suppressed." In 1901, Sir Joseph Henry Gilbert died, an English chemist. He is the co-inventor of superphosphate fertilizer. Superphosphate is a compound produced by treating rock phosphate with sulfuric acid, phosphorus acid, or a mixture of the two. In 1893, Sir John Bennett Laws opened the first fertilizer factory, thus initiating the artificial fertilizer industry. The following year, Gilbert joined him, and they began a collaboration lasting more than half a century. And in 1982, the Environmental Protection Agency announced it had found dangerous levels of dioxin in Times Beach, Missouri. Eventually, the EPA purchased the town for $32 billion, quarantined the site, and spent $110 million for cleanup. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from the University of Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason, urging you to visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find our daily ag programming, Commodity Week, and updates of the marketplace, including all those USDA reports. They're at willag.org. And don't forget, if you can't get to the website and miss our programs on the radio, you can always get an update from the telephone system at 217-333-3434. We update at 10:30 and 3:15 daily at 217-333-3434. Steve Hilberg is here now with a look at the agricultural weather.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. Winter weather kept a tight grip on Illinois this week, beginning with the surge of Arctic air last weekend. Very cold air, accompanied by winds from 30 to 40 miles per hour, blasted across Illinois last Sunday. Daytime temperatures remained in the single digits, and with the gusty winds, wind chill temperatures were 15 to 30 degrees below zero. In northern Illinois, ground blizzard conditions reduced visibilities to near zero in some locations and made for extremely hazardous travel. Temperatures did warm a bit on Monday, but then began to steadily rise with the approach of the next weather system as winds swung into the south. Unfortunately, it is generally hard to displace the cold, dense air near the ground, and another round of snow, sleet, and freezing rain plagued central and northern Illinois into Christmas Eve day. This system departed in time for high pressure to spread over Illinois and bring most of the state a pleasant Christmas day. However, the next weather system that affected us at the end of the week was already pushing into the western United States. There aren't any signs that the active weather pattern we have been in will be changing soon, so we are not likely to see much of a change the last week of December, with weather systems affecting Illinois and the Midwest every 2 to 3 days. For the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
And I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, wishing you the best of holiday seasons. Stay safe, stay warm, and have a great weekend.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture throughout East Central Illinois and Western Indiana. 866-837-9027.